Hi, the House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Please call the roll, see who's here and who's not.
Representative Price Tompkins.
Here.
Representative Cal Rego.
Here.
Representative Stoops.
Here.
Representative Keller.
Here.
Representative Vasquez.
Excused.
Chair Lynn.
Here. Okay. Again, good morning, everybody. This morning we're going to be hearing HB 93, probation and parole officers' work and travel accommodations. That's been previously heard. We're going to hear HB 68, electronic distribution of reports. Again, previously heard. I hope to hear those bills and then move them out as soon as we can. And then HB 106 is going to be a long, kind of complicated bill, and we'll see how far we get with it. That's about uniform interstate, I guess, child support and parentage and so on. So with that, we're going to begin with HB 93, and that's probation and parole work, travel accommodations. Is anybody from Representative Tilton's office here today? Please come forward.
Mr. Chair, we have to rescind the action before
yes.
we do that.
Okay. We do need to rescind the action on the, when he moved off last time. I'd call on my vice chair to make an appropriate motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I make a motion that we rescind the committee action to move the committee, to move the bill from committee last time. We moved version H out as amended. The amendment didn't work, so we'll bring it back for us to work on that. So I move action on moving HB 93, which will bring HB 93 version H back before us.
No.
Okay, let me.
H is the new one, the new CS.
Yeah, okay. Well, it'll bring version H before us as a working copy. That's right. Yeah,
we'll
explain that.
Without objection, that is rescinded. And now we need to adopt the new CS version on this, Mr. Vice Chair.
Okay, Mr. Chair, move version LS0404H of CS for HB 93 State Affairs before committee for action.
Very good. Somebody object for discussion?
Mr. Chair, I object for discussion.
Okay, it's on the table. Any comments you'd like, introduce yourself, any comments you'd like to make?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Heath Hilliard, staff to Representative Tilton. I'm here instead of Suzanne Downing, who is away on personal business. You have before you version H, the committee substitute. And I'll just point out very briefly that the only change from the version you considered on Tuesday can be found on page 4, lines 30 and 31. This encompasses an amendment that was made by Representative Grunberg, and what it does is simply moves the word only from the beginning of the sentence to after steady employment only if the travel violates other conditions of parole.
Fine. Thank you. Anybody audience like testify? Anybody online like testify on this? If not, we'll close public testimony, bring it to the committee. Any comment or any motions from the committee?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Oh, I'm sorry.
I just had a comment. I'm
yes.
just happy to see it back and tidied up a little bit. I think it was getting a little convoluted with the amendments, so I'm happy to see it back in its original form. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'll entertain a motion at this point.
Oh, I remove my objection.
Thank you.
I'm going to move the make a motion to move the bill, Mr. Chair, as you request. But I just want to say that it was my amendment and that it did not clarify the situation when we went to legal and they looked at it. So it's a good, really good change to what we have here for us. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move that we move HB 93-0404H out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you very much. Without objection, the bill moves. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's pretty tough, wasn't it? Okay. Now we have another bill. We hope we can move out of here with about the same alacrity. We all, you like to use that word.
Do we have a dictionary?
Yeah. We have HB 68, Electronic Distribution of Reports, sponsored by Reverend Christ Tompkins. Would you introduce yourself, sir?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Jonathan Christ Tompkins. Also sit on the other side of this
dynamic on occasion, and presented the scope of the bill last time upon Representative Keller's recommendation. My staff and I vetted a question and did some further diligence on a definition and sort of the tightness of definition, and after some deliberation with Jim Pound, staff to Representative Keller, we learned more, which I think is a positive thing, and also concluded that we think it's okay for it to move in its current form, but we want to keep an eyeball on the definition issue in case other agencies express interest in trying to be unintentionally included in the scope of this bill. Again, right now we think it's okay, but we'll want to keep an eye on that in the future.
Really, it looks like we moved the CS on this bill at the last committee meeting. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so any questions, discussion from the committee? Anybody online like to testify? Anybody in the audience like to testify? If not, we're going to close public testimony, bring it to the committee. What's the desire of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I accept the sponsor's commitment to watch this bill as it goes through and the definitions, if they're still loose and something comes up on it. So with that, I'm ready to make a motion. If
I'll entertain the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 68, CS, LS0352, Hotel, under committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Okay. Without objection, the bill moves out of committee. We'll not take a short at ease while we do the paperwork on the last two bills. And the next bill is going to be HB 106. Morning again. We're back in session, and we're now going to hear for the first time HB 106. Would you please identify yourself and present the bill and make your opening comments?
Okay, for the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue.
Okay.
And House Bill 106, an act relating to the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, et cetera. I'm not going to read the whole title to you.
No, it's longer than the bill.
It's almost as long as the bill. Anyway, it's a bill that's introduced to adopt changes, federally accepted changes to the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act. Very much appreciate the committee hearing this bill on behalf of the administration. I'm going to ask Stacy Steinberg from the AG's office and Carol Beecher, who's the director of the Child Support Services Division, to present the bill, but it is a very important bill. The state of Alaska Child Support Services Division serves about one-sixth of the people in Alaska and receives approximately $20 million a year in federal funding, and passage of this bill is very important to the continued operation of that division.
So overall, what does the bill do, if passed, in one good sentence?
In one good sentence, this makes the state of Alaska's laws regarding international and interstate child support collections consistent with that in the other states.
And how many other states are there?
I think there's 49 other states, that there's other jurisdictions.
We're the 50th state to hear this?
I believe that every state, and there's a number of other jurisdictions that have Title 4D programs, but I'll let Stacy and Carol speak to the very specifics of the bill.
Very good, thank you. I'd like you to note that Representative Greenberg has not joined us. Would you please come forward? Good morning. Please identify yourselves and how many pages do we have? Let's get going on it. Tell us all about it.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carol Beecher. I am the director of the Child Support Services Division.
And I'm Stacy Steinberg. I'm a Chief Assistant Attorney General of the Collections and Support Section at the Attorney General's Office.
Right, and your voices are very similar, so when you change presenters, you make sure that our clerk over here knows which one of you folks are presenting to us.
Okay. And if I could just address the chair's question, just in a one-sentence summary. What this bill will do is to bring our laws, so all the 50 states plus three other jurisdictions, Guam, I believe it's Guam, D.C., and the Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. So we all have the same uniform law.
So, again, how many other states have adopted this?
Well, all the states and jurisdictions already have a version of the acronym is UFSA. 12 states have already adopted this 2008 version. There's 19 states that have introduced legislation that's pending, and then the remaining jurisdictions are right now drafting bills.
So if we were to make any amendments to this bill, how would that affect the overall bill throughout the other states?
It would have a dramatic effect. This is a uniform law, and so to remain a uniform law, it would have to be enacted as is. That's recommended by the Uniform Law Commission.
So it would have to go back to the other states to address any changes we make here?
No. What happened is that this is a uniform law, and this is what's been recommended by the commissioners of the Uniform Law Commission.
No.
And it is important because CSSD receives federal funds, and to make sure that this whole process works, they have tied it to CSSD's funding to continue to receive federal funding. And it is important, too, and to get into a little bit more details that Ms. Beecher will address, is that the U.S. has signed on to the Hague Convention. And then in order for the United States to actually be able to ratify that convention, all the states and jurisdictions have to adopt these laws. So we have the uniform laws, and we can have in place the processes we need for international child support cases. And Ms. Beecher is going to address that in a little bit more detail in her overview.
Okay. Now, I don't know how you plan to present it. This is quite a lengthy bill. It looks fairly complicated. How do you plan to present it? Are we going to do like a sectional analysis to begin with? And would you prefer that if we have any questions that we ask as we go through the analysis, or would you prefer that we wait until the end?
Well, Chair, what our plan was is for Ms. Beecher to just give an overview to the committee, just to kind of give a general understanding
right, okay.
of what this bill is about. And then if you like, I was going to go through and do a sectional analysis, if that's your preference.
Okay, good. That sounds good to me. Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask the same question you asked, but a little differently. I mean, you said that a one-sentence overview here, the purpose is to align with the other states. So would that be the meaning of a no vote? Is that the only meaning it has? In other words, if I'm sitting here and I'm going to vote yes or no, you know, eventually here and eventually on the floor, a no vote, what does it mean? I mean, does it mean that I am not going to go along with the other states, or does it mean something specific to do with CSED? And is it that's that we can understand and have obviously have no input into?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Keller, it does a couple different things. I mean, the first thing is to have the uniform law among all the 50 states and the four jurisdictions. And that's important because, going back a little bit, is that there's the Hague Convention where different countries have come together to try to have effective enforcement of international cases for people moving to different countries. And the U.S. has signed on to this convention, but the U.S. can't actually ratify the treaty until the states make changes in their laws. And so that's what this is designed to do, is to make the changes in state law so the U.S. can ratify this treaty. And it's also important, for one, so our state can enforce these international cases to the benefit of our citizens. And it's vitally critical for the Child Support Services Division. They're a federally funded program. They get a 66% federal match, and that's about between $19 to $20 million. And so this specifically has to be passed to continue to receive federal funding. And the deadline for CSSD, or for our state to have this passed, is to have it in effect by July 1st of 2015. So it is very, very important for the agency and for their continued funding. But it also benefits Alaskans if they have an international child support case.
And before you follow up, I'd like to call in Representative Vasquez to join us. Welcome. Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you. Just thank you for the answer. And don't interpret what I asked as a resistance of what the bill does. As I understand what the bill does, I have no problem with it. I think, you know, we need to clarify our interaction with other countries, you know, and how we deal with our children and support type stuff. But I can't help be a little bit frustrated because we sit here and there's no effect. It's yes or no. You know, so.
By Representing Stutes.
Thank you. So just for clarification purposes only, we pass it as it is or we don't pass it?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. And I thought I'd mentioned, did you want to ask a question or did you recognize that you've been here?
You've recognized it.
That's what I thought.
I had a question.
Okay.
Actually, a few questions.
Okay. Go ahead.
For the record, these folks Corey, the alleged liaison from the Department of Law, and I have spent over an hour on this. I've had a lot of questions, and a lot of them have not been answered. And I don't know that these people can answer them. What we're dealing with, folks, here is a treaty, an international treaty for child support, that will involve substantial changes in the way we collect child support, particularly internationally. And it's kind of lengthy. You're going to correct me if I'm wrong on anything I'm saying. I'm trying to summarize what I know. Only 6 or 7 countries have ratified this treaty out of all the countries. And there's a question of what the penalty is really going to be if, number one, we don't adopt this. Number two, we adopt any changes in it. Because as members of the committee know, when you adopt a uniform law, it doesn't have to be word for word. It just has to be substantially similar and uniform in its application. And we do that all the time. We make changes all the time. I can't think of hardly any law we've ever passed that's uniform, that we didn't make some changes. And they're noted in the uniform laws annotated. And when I hear that we can't make a single change in this, I've asked these folks to have a witness before one of our committees that goes to judiciary after this, somebody from the federal government who's going to personally answer what we can and cannot do and what the ramifications are. As I understand it, there are 2 steps in this. Number one, we have to pass this uniform law. And number two, we then have to ratify the treaty.
Two separate
things in the Congress. They have passed this law, and then the states have to adopt it. And I'm told that every state has to adopt it. If even one state doesn't adopt it, we can't ratify the treaty. I want to see some definite firsthand proof of that fact. And if so, I don't know, I understand from what they're saying now that 12 have adopted this. I thought that they told me yesterday 38 had adopted it. And I need to know clarification. How many have adopted it? And for us to rush into something, and this, I've looked at the bill.
Yeah, and we're not rushing any. We're going to take whatever time we need on this bill.
I'm trying to give a background of what I've learned. There are a lot of states that haven't done this yet. And for us to rush into something when we don't know if every other single state's going to adopt it, and we don't have a good idea of whether they have the votes on the floor of the Senate to enter into this international treaty, I need to know some more things about it. As you know, we haven't been able to ratify the Law of the Sea Treaty, and we had Representative Heller and I and several others had quite a debate on this the other day on the floor of the House. And I don't know if the Senate, with this current Senate, is likely to want to adopt this treaty. They may very well have the votes, but I'd like to see not second or third hand proof, but some of these questions directly answered when I hear, number one, we can't change a comma, number two, we have to do this by July 1st.
Did they say that this morning, we can't change a comma?
Well, they said we can't make any changes. I want to find out from these people, right, and then directly whether we can make any changes and why we have to rush July 1st on this large bill. And it doesn't seem like a bad bill to me, but I think this legislature needs to know these things generally, because otherwise, and this is the second bill in 2 legislatures or 3, we had a banking bill that I put through a couple of years ago, that we had to do it by a certain date, absolutely had to do it, which we did. It wasn't a problem. But we need to know, number one, what discretion we have and why the rush, particularly since so few other countries have done this. It's a new thing. All the states have to do it, and then it has to be ratified by the U.S. Senate. If I may ask my question, am I substantially wrong in anything I've just said to summarize it?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, it is my understanding that there are about 33 countries that have signed on, the European Union being one, with, and which entails 28 countries. And then I believe there are five besides that, including Hungary, Ukraine, Burkina Faso,
Albania.
And Albania.
I stand corrected.
The European
Union did it, and that apparently binds those countries. And I'd like to know more about that. I'm not aware of, I don't know how that works. I've never heard somebody say a union does it, and therefore it binds every country in it. That, I assume that's correct. I understand there's some country in Africa that's joined it. Anyway, those are my questions, Mr. Chair.
I think they're good, valid questions.
Any other, on that point? Sure, go ahead.
Thank you.
And I don't know which is better, either pull the mic more closely to you or speak up. I don't know. I know one way is good and the other way is not. So
I can speak up and I will pull it closer.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. I'm just going to give a general background on the history of the bill of USA as it has moved through the child support programs in the country. And then Stacy will follow with the sectional analysis. In 1975, the child support programs were formed in Congress through the 4D article, section 4D of the Social Security Act. The initial purpose of the program was a recovery program for monies that were spent by governmental entities for welfare programs. Through time, the child support program has learned that it is a very effective way of keeping people from getting on welfare, so the focus has become more and more family-oriented and trying to find ways to prevent people from becoming dependent on assistance. The child support programs, as mentioned previously, are federally funded, matched programs, 66% federal, 34% state, and in Alaska that is around $19 million. Alaska's program has adopted UFSA. We all were mandated, every state and the territories were mandated to adopt UFSA in 1996. By 1998, all U.S. territory or jurisdictions had adopted the 1996 version. Since then, there were several versions that have had amendments applied. In 2007, the United States signed on to the what we call the convention. It's got a very long name, the Hague Convention on the International Recovery of Child Support and Other Forms of Family Maintenance. The 2008 Uniform Law Commission then took the language from that as mandated by that treaty, and that is what is incorporated in this version in Article 7 of this bill that you have before you. The new law, Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, was passed in September of 2014 and signed by the President, and it requires the passage of UFSA 2008 into law by the various states in the Union by in the first term of, or the first session of their legislature. So for us, that is by July 1, 2015. They have tied it to our funding, so it's mandated, and we may lose our funding from the federal match part if we do not enact it into law. And part of the President's bill, the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, also requires that the bill be adopted verbatim.
Would you read that last part again on the verbatim?
The bill must be adopted verbatim.
And that's according to whom?
That is according to the public law, the strengthening families, this is preventing sex trafficking.
Okay. Just a moment, Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few clarifying questions. The vote to the passage of the Sex Trafficking Act that precipitated this legislation, and my other clarifying question is, you mentioned it was in public law, so just to make sure this is framed correctly, you're saying law passed by Congress said that all state legislatures must pass this by July 1 of this year.
That is correct. Although I could...
This is Stacey Steinberg. I'm through the chair, Representative Christ Thompson. If I can just clarify, there was already existing federal law in 42 U.S.C. 666 that said that all states had to adopt the 1996 version of UFSA, and in this Prevention of Sex Trafficking Act that was just signed in September, what it did is it updated and amended those sections to replace 1996 with the 2008 version of UFSA. And that's
what was the vote total?
I can't answer what the vote total is. That is something that we can look up and provide to you after this hearing. I don't have that information with me today.
Okay. Any questions on those points? Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mean to be critical in the negative sense. I mean to be critical in the scientific sense in my question. You just said a minute ago, Ms. Beecher, and I quote, we may lose funding. And I want to focus on the word may.
Oops, I'm sorry.
Did you mean to say may, or did you mean to say will? Because may, with all due respect, is quite different than will lose funding.
Through the chair, I am, based on the information that I've been given, it is may.
One more time, please. Would you repeat that, please?
Yes, through the chair, or Chairman Lynn, yes, it is may in the Uniform Commission documents that we have been working with.
And who would be the person to decide whether to do it or not? Or group?
Of whether or not it is mandated to be adopted verbatim? Through the, Representative Lynn, I can check that with our representative who is part of the Office of Child Support Enforcement, the federal office, and get that clarifying information for you.
Okay. Representative Grunberg?
There are two issues. Number one is the issue of verbatim versus non-verbatim. The other issue, and there are other issues here too, is may versus will. A third issue is what we're relying on. You know, if we're dealing with a treaty, we may need to talk to somebody from the Department of State rather than somebody from the Department of Health and Social Services or whoever passes the money along. And we need to hear from somebody at the top, not just somebody in a region who is interpreting something somebody else said. We want to, at least this representative, would like to strip away the outside of the onion here. And I'm sorry if you happen to be the first thing that's come down the pike recently, but I think I'm speaking for a lot of folks in the legislature, and apparently one of our senators who spoke to us a day or so ago.
And who is that?
Murkowski.
Okay.
That before we give up our sovereignty, and this may be the greatest thing since sliced bread, I'm a family lawyer and I happen to like these bills and think they're good, but there's something else going on here. And I'm not a fan of this term, but I think it may be true, and that may be federal, even international overreach. And before I give away any power of this legislature, this House, or this committee, I want to be sure that we have to. And I'm sorry, I'm on the soapbox, but I've said that to you guys personally.
I like what you just said. Representative Keller.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, kind of just looking at this, if you have to get 50 states in order for this to have an effect, that means any single state has the veto power for this action. And, I mean, that's incredible, because it puts every state in a catbird seat, you know, if there's a reason to not press on. Has that been considered? And I'm sure there's talk on that, but go ahead.
Representative Keller, through the chair, it has, and all of the states have uniform law commissioners who had part in these amendments and in the drafting of UFSA 2008, including Alaska. I believe it was Deb Baer that was part of the commission that did the wording on the 2008. The original UFSA was put together by the states and then was worked so well that the federal government decided to mandate it in 1996. All of the states did sign on to it within the 2 years. It is, and I'm sure part of that is because of the tie to the federal funding.
Mr. Chair. Reverend Nirenberg.
It's been a little while since I looked at this is like the third or fourth of these bills. First was the Uniform Reciprocal Enforcement of Support Act, and that was, I think, in the 70s, which I worked on. And then there was RERISA, the revised uniform. And then they went down these others. But my recollection in looking at the Uniform Acts is, even though they were tied to federal funding, that doesn't mean it had to be verbatim. And you look in a large volume of bound books called the Uniform Laws Annotated. It lists the Uniform Act, and then underneath it, every change made by every state. And unless I miss my guess, and I'd be willing to bet a small bet on it, that a lot of states had a lot of changes, individual changes, and that didn't destroy the uniformity in the act and didn't disqualify them from federal funding. Do you know whether I'm right in that?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I do not know.
So that's something else we need to know, and we can simply look at that, because normally, if, as all of you know, I think, on the committee, you can adopt a uniform act, but you can still make various changes as long as it doesn't destroy the unanimity, a uniformity in that. And these commissioners on uniform acts, they want to get these states to adopt it, and they try to make it so it's fairly broad. So as long as it's generally uniform, you can say this is the Uniform Act, and it shall be interpreted uniformly.
Is that something like an initiative where the people pass an initiative on something, then the state goes forth, we have a couple of bills like that right now, to draft regulations where it cannot destroy the intent of the initiative, but we can make different restrictions and changes as long as it doesn't violate the intent of the initiative? Is that the same type of thing?
The same kind, yes, it is. For uniform acts, there's the commissioners on uniform state laws, and every state has a number of them. I think we have four or five in this state. And Deborah Baer has been the person who's coordinated most of these in the legislature. But Bart Peterson and various people have done this for a long time. And they sit on various drafting committees. And then ultimately they bring the bill to the full body of the commissioners, meet several times a year. And if they approve them, it goes to the House of Delegates of the American Bar Association, and they have to ratify it. And if they do, then they put them out to the states. They're on various subjects, and they're usually pretty good. We've adopted a lot of them. But that doesn't mean you have to adopt them verbatim, that, you know, we have changes all the time. And this is cloaked in a treaty now. And I'm wondering, another question I have, since we have a number of countries, whether those countries have felt themselves constrained, that they couldn't change anything in their internal enactment of these things. This has got lots of ramifications, not just from this, but because we, from time to time, are asked to support various treaties. And the question is whether we can make changes in the treaties. And you know, in the Law of the Sea Treaty, it's brought before the Senate with a number of changes. And President Reagan wouldn't support it initially, and they made a bunch of changes, and then he did. At least there's some question about that. But this is not an easy issue.
Okay, very good. Please continue.
Through the chair, or Chairman Lynn, the UFSA 1996 version that we currently have in statute in Alaska, this bill will do a lot of word tweaking that is just kind of cleanup language. It will add a lot of definitions to include foreign countries, because that was a rather vague concept when the 1996 version was adopted. The 1996 version was instrumental in clearing up the method of determining jurisdictional issues and controlling orders between states prior to the UFC of 1996. The way that orders were done, somebody could have an order in one state, move to another state, get an order, and it was really difficult for the families and for the child support agencies in the states to know which one they should go through. And so the uniform law made all of that the same in all of the states, which has allowed us then to do a much better job, much more efficiently, with doing the interstate orders. Interstate orders are approximately 33% of the child support orders that we deal with. This version, the bulk of it is just word tweaks. It's long, it's 41 pages, but if you go through it, you will see it adds a lot of words that deal with and foreign country, those kinds of things. The new section is the Article 7 section, which has to do with the Hague Convention language that was adopted. And it's important to note that that portion of this bill will not go into effect. It is not something that we will be following until the ratification and the passage of this throughout all of the states. So it would be in our bill, but we would not be following it until it is ratified.
Any questions, Representative Greenberg?
Mr. Chair, so only part of this bill is tied to the Hague Convention. Does the rest of it go into effect immediately?
Representative Greenberg, through the chair, yes.
Continue, please.
Okay. How many countries have to ratify the convention before it becomes effective? In other words, let us say only two countries had ever ratified it. Would it have been effective for those two countries?
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, I believe yes. For those that have signed on to the Hague Convention, it will be in effect for them. It will not be in effect for the United States until all of the states have passed it so that it can be ratified and the instrument can be signed. And
I was focusing, through the chair, I was focusing on the international application as opposed to the internal, application. So let us say, for the purpose of discussion, that the relevant number of states pass this Uniform Act, but the Senate fails to ratify the treaty. Is the U.S. bound, even though the Senate hasn't ratified the treaty? It would seem to me, if it's the laws of the states, those states that had adopted it would still be bound, even if, let's say, the relevant number of states hadn't adopted it, and let's say further, that they didn't have the votes on the Senate floor. It would seem to me that anyway, the states that had adopted it would be bound nonetheless. Am I correct?
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, I do not believe you are correct. I believe that, and my understanding of the bill is that until it is ratified by Congress, which cannot happen until all of the states and the territories pass the UFSA 2008 bill in their various jurisdictions, that it will not be in effect, the Article 7 component of it.
Through the chair.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. I unfortunately left my glasses at home. And I do remember that they had in here at the very back, folks, they have in the back, I thought, an immediate effective date on the bill itself. And
yeah.
These are reading glasses.
Yeah, let's look at sections 90 and 91. Is there something in section 7 that says that only takes effect upon ratification of the treaty? Because I don't remember us discussing that. I thought this thing took effect, as it says on page 41 of the bill, immediately, except for a transition period. I don't remember seeing a special delayed effective date on section 7. Thanks, Bob.
Through the chair, this is Stacey Steinberg from the Attorney General's office. The way the bill is set is that it is effective immediately, and what we can do is after this committee hearing, Ms. Beecher and I can go back to do some more research, because I think part of the question deals with the whole process of treaties and the ratification process, and you've asked some actually some kind of complicated questions that we'd like to go back and get some more detailed information for you on exactly what the process is. What my understanding is that although the U.S. has signed the treaty, that in order for the implementing instruments of this treaty, like to actually make it work, all the states have to pass this UFSA 2008, because, for example, it does things like the U.S. has to agree that there's what's called essential authority in every state for the other countries to deal with, and so they know who to contact. Well, that has to be done at the state level. That can't be done at the federal level. So it's my understanding that although the U.S. has signed it, all the states have to implement this law, so we have everything in place, that we have the structure in place, so the United States can then go and ratify and say, yes, we have in place all of the requirements that are necessary for us to sign on to this treaty.
You keep saying the state, and you mentioned territory. Do territories likewise have to adopt the same as states would? Are American territories?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Representative Lynn, that is my understanding. If I recall correctly, there's the Virgin Islands, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia.
A couple of others, I don't remember.
Well, those are the four that are part of the whole child support program.
I see. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you.
Wow.
Just a final question at this point. My recollection is when we spoke, the four of us, including Corey, that you said, somebody said to me that some of the states had adopted this Uniform Act, but with a proviso that it only became effective if the treaty were effective. Am I right in that? That some states had put a rider on this that was a conditional effective date?
Through the chair. That is correct. I'd have to go back to look at the specific language for the states that already did that. My understanding is that for the states that did that, they actually still have to go back to amend their statutes, that now that language isn't the correct language, but I'd have to research that in a little bit more detail to give you the information. And I didn't look at that any closer because that's not the situation in our state.
Would you clarify that for me? So some states have a provision that if it's not ratified, they don't have to carry out. Is that correct?
Representative Lynn, that is correct. I'd have to look at the specific language that they used in those states, because there were some states, I can't name them off the top of my head, that what they did is before the law was passed in this past fall, that they went ahead and knew that among the child support community, UFSA 2008 has been out there since 2008, so some states wanted to jump ahead and just go ahead and adopt it in advance. And so, but they had to basically have a provision that it wasn't effective until, and I don't remember now if it said the treaty was signed or ratified. I'll have to look at the specific language, because for your child support program, you had to have in effect either the 1996 version or the 2001. So for your child support program, you're out of compliance if you actually had in advance adopted the 2008 version. So what those states did is that they passed it, but basically said it wasn't going to be effective until this a certain thing happened. And I'll have to go back to look at what the specific language is, because it is my understanding that the states that went ahead and adopted 2008 prior to this year, and I think Minnesota was one of the states, they have to still go back now and change their statutes because the wording isn't correct now.
Yeah, let me go off topic just a little bit here. Please help me understand. A person who pays child support today and a person who receives child support today, as it is today, if they move, say, from state to state, travel, or just permanently move, say to say, as it is today, how would it be different if we pass this bill and it becomes, if everybody passes it and it becomes law? What does it mean in practicality to a support receiver and a support provider?
Representative, so for your question, are you just asking how it affects people who stay within the United States?
Yeah, or if they travel over today, what would happen? And if this treaty passes in substantial form what we have here, what would change? What's a practical advocate to providers and receivers?
Representative Lynn, that kind of question involves...
And that's very broad, I know that.
Yes. It kind of involves two components. The one component is for a parent who continues to reside in the United States, so that's not international, but it's interstate. There still are some provisions of this bill that would affect that, because this bill also includes 2001 changes to the UFSA as well as the 2008. The 2008 is focused really on international child support cases, but there still are some changes that just help clarify the 1996 version that we're working under. For example, under prior to UFSA, there could be multiple orders that a parent had to comply with, and it was very confusing. So the one thing that this law was designed to do is to change it to what's called a one-order world, so there'd only be one child support order in existence at a time for a family. But sometimes what happens is that when there had been multiple orders, there has to be what's called a controlling order determination to figure out, well, what is the controlling order that should be charging, and also what would be the appropriate order that should be modified prospectively. This version provides some additional changes on what the process is for that, just kind of some more details about which state's supposed to do the controlling order determination, what type of jurisdiction do you have to have. So for people who live still within the United States, there'll be some, I'd call them, just clarifying changes. For the 2008 version, there would be a difference for parents who have international child support cases, and that could involve someone who maybe they live here in Alaska, and they have an Alaskan child support order, but one of the parents moves to another country, such as Spain or the United Kingdom. It could affect their case. It can also affect us if a parent has a child support order from a foreign country that has signed on to the Hague Convention. If they move here and CSSD needs to enforce that foreign child support order here in Alaska. And for example, one provision that's extremely helpful, maybe one way to summarize it is that for the 2008 changes, they just provide a very efficient method for enforcing these orders either here or overseas, because it's like it sets the same rules for everyone, so everyone knows, okay, if I'm in Spain and I need Alaska to enforce this child support order, I know I need to do 1, 2, 3, 4. And it also includes helpful provisions, for example, like the foreign country, they need to provide a translation of the order, because if it's an order from Spain, well, it's probably going to be written in Spanish. And for Alaska to enforce that, we're going to need a translation of that order. CSSD had a case recently where they had an order from another country, and it had to be translated, and that was $500. So that can add up. So for international cases, it would affect parents who have international cases. I should add, there are already provisions in our current UFSA to provide for international cases, but it's not a very efficient process. It basically says, well, if the foreign country has laws that are substantially similar to ours, then, you know, Alaska can recognize that order. So there is a provision, but it's just not a very efficient process, because under that provision, the foreign country doesn't have to do anything. I mean, we just get it, and then we look at it, and we're like, okay, well, does this foreign country have laws that are similar to ours? Do the parent get due process? And so there are provisions to enforce that, but it's just not a very efficient, it's kind of a cumbersome process. And for example, some states have had to adopt and work with foreign countries, and each state has gone out to try to have reciprocal agreements with foreign countries. For example, CSSD does have one with Germany, but as you can imagine, if you have 50 states and each one of them are trying to set up reciprocal agreements with a foreign country, it's just not a very efficient process, and so all the states are spending time, and I don't know about the other states or try to set up reciprocal agreements with countries that they have cases with. But the way it's set up now it's just not a very efficient process. So one of the goals of this is try to make it efficient. And we've already had the history of our UIFSA that in the interstate context, it's worked incredibly well, especially prior to the previous system, which Representative Greenberg had worked, had talked about. It was called URISA, and then there was ARISA, which was URISA, which was the revised one. And it worked, but just not as efficiently as it could. And that's when UIFSA came about, and it really has increased interstate support and really resulted in a more effective interstate collection, because it wasn't really until the 70s and 80s when people really started moving among states. And under the old law, a lot of times parents, they would jump from state to state, especially if you had a parent, unfortunately, that was trying to avoid their child support, is that they'd go to one state. And under the old system, sometimes it took actually up to a year to go through the old processes with, you know, we had to do an old process with our court, and then they would send it to the court of the other state, and sometimes it would take up to a year just to get it set up. And then for some parents, once you caught up to them, well, then if they moved to another state. We also had the problem under the old laws with forum shopping. So sometimes a parent would move to another state and try to figure out, well, where can I get the best support order? So just with a little bit of a history of UIFSA, UIFSA has been very effective in interstate collection of child support. And really what this does with the 2008 amendments is just really expand that to say we have these really effective laws now that work with interstate situations, and let's try to expand that and deal with international cases, because, you know, in the 70s, you know, people started moving among states, and now certainly in this day and age, it's much more common now that people are starting to move, you know, between countries, and especially in the European nations. So really, I think just from a very just broad perspective, what this does is it's really trying to expand UIFSA and give the child support agencies and parents more effective tools, more efficient tools to actually get collection of child support cases, which right now within international cases, it can be just really, really difficult. I mean, not only are you trying to deal with a country that's a far away, different time differences, different languages, different rules. I mean, it was hard enough under the old law to deal with different state laws, and we all spoke English, much less to deal with a country that just has their laws set up and have a little bit different process for, you know, establishing what we call family support obligations. So really, I think in a broader context, it's dealing with, you know, trying to expand to the international arena and just make it more effective, so that parents that have these international cases aren't, you know, aren't kind of left out in the cold.
Thank you. I think that's all. Just out of care and passing, of these other nations that are currently involved, we have so many people moving back and forth from Mexico, Central America, and so on. In Mexico, other Central American countries, are they any of the participants in the international community?
Representative Lynn, I'm not sure if they've been participants. I know they haven't signed on to the convention.
What's the last part?
I'm not sure if they've been participants in the Hague Convention. I'd have to look at that. I know that when I this week reviewed who the countries that had signed on, is that Mexico or any country in Central America had not signed on to the convention at this point.
Thank you. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. Would either of you be able to describe a specific case that's come to your attention in recent history that has the sort of international complexity of someone, instead of hopping state to state, using discrepancies of international law or international boundaries to try to escape or avoid obligations? I mean, could you contextualize this in a human sense or in an example that we can sort of appreciate and relate to?
The chair, sorry.
Yep. I'm going to hand this over to the CSSC director, because I think that she deals with the more hands-on of the everyday cases.
Are you folks able to keep track of which one's speaking? Okay. Yeah, Representative Keller.
Did she want to respond first, or?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. I cannot give you a specific case. Alaska actually doesn't have, at this time, a lot of international cases where we have one of the parties who live and reside in the foreign country. We have a lot of military cases where they go over to a foreign country, but the laws and the order is usually a United States order. But I could find something that would give you an example and follow up with you to provide that.
And say for a military family that goes, are they on the status of forces? Say, American military wife goes over with her husband to a foreign country and begin in a child support situation. Do the laws, are they subject to the laws of the countries where they are, or because they are military dependent or such? Who has jurisdiction?
Chairman, then it would be wherever the order was first established. So if they were from Alaska, from Anchorage, they would go over to Japan, for instance, the order would still be the controlling order would be the anchor, the Alaska order.
Okay, thank you, Representative Keller.
Yeah, if I could, Mr. Chair, I've got several questions that I expect to be answered at a different time, and I just want to throw them on the table for them to
answer. Well, let's do that, and then as we maybe get to that.
Well, it's an overview-type question.
Well, go ahead. Because we're not rushing this bill at all.
Okay. And like I say, I don't expect the answers now. But one of them is I'd like to know just exactly how many cases you deal with that have, per year on that this law would apply to. The other is you indicated that the big stick here is the money. And I just want to put on the record, I don't think you have to do it on the run, but just exactly how much money are we talking about that comes to the state and the significance of it, as I understand it, and I may be wrong, you can confirm or not, is that it funds our entire CSED in Alaska. And then it also give us, if you would, at some point in the discussion, give us an idea just how much the federal government spends overall, all the states, international, whatever, on CSED. Because as I understand, CSED, and it's been a couple of years since I looked at this, there's zero GF impact because this is pretty much operated from afar. And I've had a half a dozen at least constituents over the years that were horribly frustrated because of the inflexibility and the standardization of the laws where and there's nothing we could do as state legislators except point at you. So the amount of money, the amount of cases we're talking about, this sort of effect, overall, federally, how much money, if it is just CSED that we're talking about, just that block of money to fund CSED in Alaska or whatever. You know, that's a series of questions, yes. Mr. Chair, and I don't mean to...
If you give the answer to those and respond at the appropriate time in the presentation.
Yeah, that's good.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Grunberg.
Just two things. Number one, in answer to the Chair's question...
Which one?
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
The hypothetical was a couple... military couple, at least one of them is military, gets divorced, let's say in Alaska, and then one or more goes overseas to the Yokosuka Naval Base or wherever, and they want to either enforce it or modify it. As I understand it, where one of them is on a base overseas, or at least stationed overseas, maybe living on the economy, and the other is elsewhere in the United States, normally they would go back to the Anchorage Superior Court, the Alaska Superior Court, and get an order of enforcement or modification. And if they got an enforcement order, they would give that to the military and attach the person's paycheck. Is that not correct?
Through the chair, yes, that would be correct. And in that situation, they have an Alaska order. If they're in the military, even though they've moved to Japan, generally, they're going to keep their residence, the residence still remains in the United States. And so in military situations are a little bit easier because you are correct in that Alaska order, the jurisdiction to modify that order is going to remain in Alaska, and also the enforcement of that order is fairly straightforward because CSSD can send the wage withholding order to, it's called DFAS, and although the person's in Japan, they're still in the military, so they're getting paid through the United States, so it can still attach.
So those are looked at as domestic United States cases in answer to your question. The other thing was, let us say we pass this and country X does not pass theirs, then we would be bound by the provisions of this, the limitations in this bill, but country X would not, because they're not parties to the treaty, right?
Representative Gorenberg, through the chair, in those cases, we would deal with them as we are now with foreign countries. If they are not signers to the treaty, then we make the determination as we currently do with foreign countries based on their body of laws, the similarity to ours. So it would be a situation like that. And we should also note that in the bill, if there were something that were abhorrent to Alaska policy, we would not have to enforce that order with that country.
Without getting into the weeds here, this bill clarifies, makes some changes in the way we will enforce foreign orders in this particular case, or that they would have to enforce ours. If we pass this in the state of Alaska, we're bound in the state of Alaska. You're bound by it. The other country would not be, unless they had a similar law on the books. They wouldn't be treaty bound. In other words, they could force us to enforce their order under the provisions of this new state law, but they would not be bound to enforce our order. It would be a one-way door in that case. Through the chair.
Is that correct?
To the chair, I can respond to that question. If they're not signers to the treaty, then they're not covered by Article 7, this new Article 7, which provides how we deal with countries who have signed on to the treaty. So if they're not part of the treaty, we deal with them as we do today. We already have provisions for some enforcement of foreign orders, and basically, as Ms. Beecher had mentioned, we look at the order, see if they have laws that are substantially similar to ours, see if there's due process. So there is a way to enforce those foreign orders, but it's very cumbersome. And again, we would be enforcing it for the parent, not for the foreign country. You'd be correct, is that I don't know if that other foreign country would provide us, if we asked them to do certain things for enforcement, they may or may not. So it looks like maybe I didn't answer your question or I misunderstood you.
When you and I, both of you and I, went over this yesterday, my recollection is that in Section 7, it states without limitation that this is the way Alaska will treat that order for enforcement. So regardless of what you do currently, if this bill passes, let's say no other state in the world ever takes this bill up, and it's just Alaska, and you're going to be dealing with Uzbekistan or something that hasn't ratified this, we would still be bound by the provisions of this state law, which, as I recall, provide very limited bases for challenging the law of Uzbekistan, or the decree from Uzbekistan. On the other hand, in case number two, where we have Ms. X, who's moved to Uzbekistan, and they haven't ratified this, don't have any law like this, they would go under Uzbekistani law. In that case, it would be a one-way door. We're bound, but they're not.
Right? Is that correct?
Chair, if you could just repeat the question again to make sure I'm following along with what the question is.
My hypo. Alaska passes the bill. Uzbekistan has nothing like it. We would be bound by this law in our state, the state administration, your agency, and the courts and everybody else. Uzbekistan would not. So this bill provides very limited ability to challenge the order. It's almost like the Uniform Arbitration Act, that if you challenge it in court, there are very few bases that you can challenge an arbitration under Title IX. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This basically makes that the same principle here. So you can't say we don't like the Uzbekistani order or whatever. It's only if it's the wrong person, or if the person wasn't in Uzbekistan, a jurist, the very, very narrow ability to challenge that under this. We in our courts would lose the jurisdiction to challenge that Uzbekistani order, except it's allowed under this law, this new law, our bill here. On the other hand, they could disregard us if Uzbekistani orders of law permitted that. We'd be bound, but they wouldn't, because it wouldn't be treaty bound.
Through the chair, if I could address that. Under this bill, Article 7 only deals with countries, orders from countries who have actually signed on. Article 7 only deals with Hague Convention orders. So if this other country hasn't signed on, Article 7 is not going to apply to their order.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Reverend Greenberg.
Could you cite me to the page and line where it says that? I may be dead wrong.
And you can do that later.
Okay.
Continue, please.
Yeah, at some point. Thanks.
Did you want to? Are we at the point to go through it section by section?
Yes,
you think?
Chairman Lynn, we are ready for Stacy Steinberg to do her analysis.
Is anybody ready to do a sexual analysis on this thing till we know more what we're talking about here?
Sounds good.
Mr.
Chairman, in light of the significant questions that have been raised, it appears that it may be even premature looking section by section when some basic questions as far as treaty ratification and so forth. I mean, there's some fundamental questions
that really
need to be answered before we spend our precious time, any further precious time on this matter. Unless we've got the answers to these fundamental questions, I don't think we can proceed. I think it's a waste of time, really. With due respect to our guests and the committee members, some really serious fundamental questions have been raised.
Yeah, and I think they're good questions, good solid questions that have been raised here. Any other comments from the committee? Now, we want to proceed all deliberate speed, but we don't have to continue today. This bill, whatever we do, is going to come back before this. For this committee. So we're not in a big hurry to rush it out the door. It's extremely important, especially to, those involved, personally involved in the child support thing. Representative Keller.
I just want to identify those remarks. I mean, I just a matter of time. We have a lot of questions out there that we can discuss, and it is going to be kind of frustrating to get into the weeds on the sections when the big questions are still there in our head. I just wanted to say that with the comments.
So we need to determine, basically, the treaty thing itself rather than how it might be enforced and so on. Okay, I would agree basically with that. Any comments from the committee at this point on that or any other part of this bill? Representative Television.
Just some language I think that was in there as I went through it is probably connected to Representative Grunberg's question about reciprocating countries, I believe is how it was described in there. Is that correct? So I'm kind of trying to connect to what he said, that only those people that would be referred to as reciprocating countries or connected with the agreement would be applicable to. And maybe if you answer those questions, if you can just identify those particular areas, I think that'll really help us understand it a little bit better.
Just one.
Yeah, Reverend Greenberg.
Assuming that you're correct, and I may very well be wrong in what I was saying, that would create two classes. of international contests. Those to whom this bill would apply, and those countries with which it would apply, and all the rest. So you'd have to look and see, are these people under this? And if so, we have very limited defenses. And if they're not, then it's off to the races or whatever you can do under your current situation. And as we go on, we'll need to know how you will continue to handle the vast majority of the countries, or the other countries, maybe not so vast, but and how you're going to decide the two. I'm sorry, I don't mean to get to too many questions, but you see what I'm getting at.
Yeah, through the chair, that is correct. There's going to be, in essence, I mean, you could call it two classes of orders. There's going to be international orders from what I'd call the Hague Convention countries, and then there may be an international order from a country that's not signed on to the Hague Convention, which would not be addressed under Article 7.
And one more, if I may.
One more.
For a number of years, we've had what's called the Hague Convention on the International Abduction of Children, and that's been tremendously helpful. I really want to know how many, is there, say, support cases are under this. International kidnapping of children, custodial, has been extremely helpful by that Hague Convention. And the United States is a signator, along with almost every other country now. And I never had a case involving one, but, and this maybe is the wrong department to be asking, do we need to be implementing that too? That deals with children's lives.
Through the chair, Ms. Beecher and I, we address the child support issues, and we CSSD does not get involved with the child custody issues, so we can't address those.
I understand. Okay.
Based on what we've said here, particularly Reverend Grunberg and Vasquez, how long do you suspect it might take to get basic answers to the some questions that have been raised today, so we can do some scheduling on this?
Chair Lynn, I think we can get some answers fairly quickly.
Within a week?
Certainly within a week we can. As far as one of the representatives had asked about it and getting witnesses, had asked for potentially a witness from the State Department or from the federal government to address some issues. I think that within a week that we could be able to answer the questions and also see if we can get someone lined up to testify on some of these other areas.
I have some. Yes, Reverend Grunberg.
Not only the witnesses, but if they're relying on documents, treaties, and statutes, it could be very helpful to us, and I hope I'm speaking for the other folks here, if that, those documents and a cover memo could be given to us in advance so you could say, this is covered by Section 12, Clause 3 on page 4 of the accompanying treaty and the statutes, so we can see and know the legal bases for what these witnesses are saying. That way we will have both the documentation and the agency interpretation. And we may need to also hear from the uniform commissioners or something, at least to be available to answer questions, maybe in a work session or something. Mr. Chair, I'm happy to devote whatever time is necessary.
Okay, fine. Before I go any further, is there anybody, everybody's heard the quite good discussion that we've had this morning. Is there anybody on the line who would like to contribute anything at this point? Anybody in the audience out there who would like to contribute something to what we already discussed this morning?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Vasquez.
I'm curious, because it involves international issues, has the congressional, our Alaskan congressional delegation, have they been approached? Has this issue been discussed with them?
Good question.
Senators Murkowski, Senator Sullivan, Congressman Don Young?
Through the chair, I'm not sure if it has, but that's something that certainly I can follow up with.
I think that'd be a good thing to do because this does impact them. So if you make some kind of contact with these good folks back in D.C. and try to get something from them, either over the comment line or in writing or something to find out where they are generally on this bill.
Would that be okay?
Yes.
Okay. With that, I really hope for you, but we have a lot of questions, and I know it's difficult for you to come up with the answers right away because it's a very complicated piece of legislation here. The intent is good, but we have to be careful of what really the unintended consequences are going to happen here. So if any other discussion would come to the committee, if not, I'm going to hold the bill. Representative Boskett.
Yes. And the CSCD has had to dealing with these issues is also very important. We're talking about 1 a year or 2 a year of really justifying expending a lot of resources dealing with those issues. I mean, at one point, we probably will need to deal with those issues, but what's the time frame for dealing with these type of issues?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Grunberg.
Part of the reason that I said what I said this morning has nothing to do with the bill, but everything to do with the legislature. From time to time, we are asked to consider a treaty. And some of those treaties at least have come through this committee. I don't know if all of them have. I know the law of the seas did, and that's the only one I'm really thinking of. But when the leadership assigns bills and stuff, we should sort of be thinking on what the procedure should be in the legislature, the kinds of things we're asking, you know, that not just taking things on faith because we're dealing with international law, federal law, and state law, and also which committees we'll be dealing, and I hope that this committee will remain involved so that way we have uniform application.
Well, we are the State Affairs Committee. It doesn't affect it. And just, does this bill go to judiciary after,
yes,
if it passes this,
yes,
committee?
Yes.
I think it does. Okay. Okay. Any other closing comments for today?
Representative Lynn, we do thank the committee for their time, and Ms. Beecher and I will, you know, work on some of the questions that you've raised and to find some answers.
Then can you contact my staff to find out when you're ready for us to schedule another meeting on this?
Through the chair, yes, we will do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to close out, hold this bill for now, go back to the regular committee. The schedule for our next State Affairs meeting has not yet been finalized, but we'll let you know what we expect to hear. Any other comments from the committee? If not, we're going to close out. Thank you. Have a great day.